think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's in like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 324 of Low Limit Football on this 25th of April, 2021. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the world of football was turned upside down this week with the rise and fall of the European Super League. Champions League and Europa League semifinals return this week, and we're going to discuss the hottest title race happening in La Liga with our special guest, Ben Hayward, European football journalist, who'll be joining us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man?
I mean, if after everything that happened this week, I feel like I've aged 20 years. What's been going on?
Longest week.
It's been crazy, but I've been well, Joe.
Longest week ever, wasn't it?
I mean, the
news was fast and fierce. I mean, it was like watching the fall of Rome as it burned to the ground. It was insane. And we're still technically smoldering. I know we're going to touch on this with Ben in a few minutes. But we're going to talk about the Super League ourselves. But man, it's just what a mess! What a mess! But we'll see, because this story is not done by any stretch of the imagination. But again, like I said, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Let's chat about that in just a few minutes. But my friend, I have the trivia question for us today, and if you'd like, I am prepared to give it to you.
Go for it.
All right. So it's an MLS question. And it was something that I overheard on the Fox broadcast of the LAFC match, opening match against Austin FC. By the way, just throwing in there, Austin FC scores their first goal in league history, franchise history. Diego Fagundes is going to be the answer to that trivia question one of these days. But we're focusing on LAFC here. And LAFC, in their first match, did beat Austin FC 2-0 to open with their fourth opening day match win in a row to start their franchise. So LAFC, currently on their fourth season, have won all four of their opening day matches. Can you name the only other MLS team in history to win their first four opening day matches of their lives?
Ooh,
so there's only one other team that's done it. They mentioned it on the Fox broadcast, and I had the wherewithal to write it down. So, and then I verified it after that. So we'll give you that at the end of the show, of course, as always. Let's get into opening thoughts. And obviously, like we had alluded to, the European Super League, we had actually broken the news at the beginning of the show last week as it was breaking. And within 48 hours, it dissolved into nothingness. And I guess we still have a Super League, Rob, if you think about it. We're just going to have an El Clasico every week is what it comes down to, because Barca and Real Madrid are the only two teams that have not formally walked away or formally put the project on pause or on hold or any kind of announcement like that. Florentino Perez has come out this week, is really the ringleader of this particular project. And, you know, in a recent story yesterday from the BBC, said that these clubs, these Super League clubs, cannot just leave. They signed a contract. There's penalties and that sort of thing. So he's you know, verbally moving forward with this European Super League concept. This was obviously shot down by the other leagues. There's talk of this morning a report in Italy saying that the three Super League clubs, Milan, AC Milan, Inter Milan, and Juventus, should be punished by the FIGC. That article came out this morning. They're looking for the Premier League teams to do the same. There were 14 Premier League teams that kind of voted this down or were against it. There's been a lot of talk of these other FAs going after these Super League clubs and punishing them somehow, whether it be financially, whether it be on the table point wise. There's a lot going on there, which has been kind of interesting to see. I don't know that that's going to happen. There's also, you know, the threat from UEFA and from FIFA that the players wouldn't have been allowed to play in the Euros or play in the World Cup. And that sort of thing. That was another big part of this mess. And a lot of the big threats, there were financial things as well. But I understand the concept of the Super League. And the one thing that, you know, as I started to think about the Super League a little more, that it would not mean the immediate death of La Liga or Serie A or the Premier League. It just wouldn't, because these teams, it would mean the immediate death of the Champions League, but not those other competitions. However, because those Super League clubs would be pulling in so much more money, eventually they would take that money away from the other clubs, and the death, it would be a slow death to those other competitions, and the Super League would emerge as kind of a closed system, one table kind of thing that you see almost here in MLS. And I think that's the reason many of the fans were against this. I agree. I'm against it as well. I don't think this is the way to do it, but I also think many people's eyes have been opened to the fact that UEFA and FIFA wield a lot more power and a lot more money than maybe they should. And they do it on the backs of maybe poorly run super clubs like Barcelona, but they do make a ton of money off them. And I think there should be maybe either a little more equity in the money that UEFA distributes to a lot of these clubs, and B, developing a financial fair play rule and system that has much more teeth to it than what we have now. Because right now this is a joke. City was and PSG were fined basically for breaking financial fair play. So there's no real punishment to the finances that these teams go through. And one of the big examples is Barcelona is almost $1 billion in debt. So I think those are the things that have come from this that have opened people's eyes. Will it happen? I don't know. But I'd like your take on it, Roberto, from what we've seen this week and what we can expect maybe down the road, maybe changes at UEFA, changes in the Super League, changes in the Champions League that, you know, were announced this week as well. What are your thoughts, my friend?
Yeah, I think it was really a week for all of us to learn a bunch of lessons. I think not just as those that are involved at the clubs, those that were going to make the Super League, those that were against it, those pundits, administrators, that kind of thing. I think when you look at it real quick, yes, you can focus on the lack of competitiveness and the elitism of whatnot, because you look at the clubs that are there. And you think to yourself, why those clubs? Why are they so special from the rest? Yes, you can say, oh, they're financially secure. They have the more popularity than all the other clubs. But that's just because of what they were accustomed to and how they got there. Also, with the financial backing. You look at teams like Chelsea and City, and you know, they aren't as historically big before the 21st century, but they got there due to that kind of financial backing. And I think there are just a lot of things that just feel very weird about it, and how I think many people have come out and really said that, you know, on the basis of it, in idea, and we've actually mentioned this to Ben as well, like in idea, there is some sort of logic, but just in that, I think you have to look at it from a financial, from a contractual point of view. I mean, you know, these teams have huge, tremendous ties that would take a lot for it to be broken, especially being in the Champions League. And, you know, for these players, you know, if they weren't going to take the risk of not wanting to play in the Euros or the World Cup qualifiers, or the World Cup or anything like that, it wouldn't make any sense. So that's why I think there are many issues going on. This isn't to say that we're making UEFA the the victims in this, but no, because they receive a lot of money from these clubs. They get a lot of it, and not just them, it's FIFA. I think there are many things to look into, and you know, I think when it comes to certain reform of the Champions League, I think when, as we're going to see that new format be made in a couple of years, I think there is something that I think will definitely be taught to all of us, that you know, these clubs themselves put them in the situation. You talk about what Barcelona are in debt. They're in that situation because of their financial back, because of the way that they're administrating their money. You know, they wanted this because they thought that there was no other way. And obviously, you know, when you're going in the Champions League, you get a lot of money from it, that prize money. And what this prize money was going to be, what? Like a solidarity payment of like $400 million or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was just a way to get more money, essentially, because, you know, the fact that they're not doing as well in the Champions League, you know, maybe not getting as much money in La Liga, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, I think everything in practice, it wasn't going to work out. And we said that last week, Joe. We even said that. We said that, you know, at the end of the day, we don't think this project is going to go forward because of so much backlash it has given, not just from fans, but those that are managing the sports and the owners as well, who thought this isn't a good idea. So yeah, I think this is a lesson to be taught in a way that we should not take this kind of situation for granted and be grateful for what we have, but also be critical of what is going on at certain clubs, the way they're managed, how competitions are being reformatted, that kind of thing. I think because the Super League failed, it shouldn't be the situation where everything's back to normal, because there's a lot of problems that are going on in all the major leagues in Europe and in the competition, the Champions League, that can be fixed to give that kind of open evenness. I think, obviously, you know, when you look at what's going on in the Bundesliga, for example, how none of them were going to make it, because you look at how they're managed, you know, the 50 plus one thing, you know, the ownership of the fans and the socios, as we say, and then the owner. So it's half and half, nothing like what's going on in England, for example. But I think if there is that equal distribution of having fans say, give a say in this kind of thing, and, you know, I don't particularly think that it was fans that got this dead. I don't think they were the main outlier, but they were a factor, but they weren't the big one. I think it was just also the case of administrators going in, putting their foot down and saying, no, this isn't going to work out, and you know, we're not going to stand by it. So that's how I personally think about all this.
Yeah, there's actually been talk now of looking at other clubs and going into that 50 plus one type of system, because none of the Bundesliga sides were going to be able to come into this because the fans wouldn't allow it. That's the power of that. But it also, you see those clubs, they're financially sound, all of them. And you know, the only real quote unquote non 50 plus one side would have been RB Leipzig, and RB Leipzig were not even entertaining thoughts of coming into this. So there was something to be said about the German clubs not coming in. I think there would have been more strength in this if the, you know, as they talked about, they had 12 teams going to 15. If two of those three teams would have been, let's say, Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, I think there would have been more teeth to this, and then maybe that 15th side being PSG. But PSG came out and said that this was not what they were looking at. You know, Bayern Munich came out and said that, but again, the German sides don't allow for this quick jump of faith that the other clubs made. So, you know, I think there needs to be a reform into the system, but I don't know where that's going to come from. I do think that, you know, it was interesting. I've seen, you know, at first when we talked about this, I said to you that because this was such a closed system, that this was kind of American influenced, right? We've got the American owners, we've got John Henry, we've got Stan Kroenke, we've got the Glazers that were a part of this, that this felt very American, this proposal to me. And what I'm seeing now, or what I'm hearing from other journalists around the world, is that it's not so much that the Kroenkes and the Glazers were influencing what was going on. It's just that the Florentino Perez's and the Andrea Agnelli's of the world saw the kind of money and the kind of stability that the MLS clubs have, and they wanted to mimic that here, where those MLS clubs are all making money, but the problem is that there's no repercussion for poor performance, right? I mean, we've talked about that a million times, and those teams would have had that type of security where they were never going to be out of this league no matter what. So there was no worry about who your coach is, if it's Andrea Pirlo or if it's, you know, somebody else. It won't matter because it is just no consequence. But they were looking at it as a way to stabilize the money and to continue to spend at the level that they wanted to. They wanted to Americanize the system based on what they'd seen. And American owners over there were like, well, hey, we're familiar with this. Let's jump in. And I think that's where you got the Manchester Uniteds and the Arsenals to come in and buy into this system. So it was interesting how it was perceived. It was interesting how it collapsed so quickly, where it was City and Chelsea that were the two teams that started this domino effect of walking away from this project. And then slowly but surely, within 24 hours, pretty much everybody had walked away. So now where we are today, it's Barca and Real Madrid that are still, quote unquote, in the project, but everything else has either been paused or they've walked away. So I don't think this story is completely dead yet. And as long as Florentino Perez continues to get in front of television cameras and talk about it, I think it will still have life. But I think the life of the Super League coming together is certainly dead at this point in time. So we'll keep an eye on this story as it develops and as things change in it. I'm sure we'll see definite changes in it over the summer as well. So let's table that discussion and get to our interview. We were able to have European football journalist Ben Hayward join us just before the show, and we got to talk about a little more about the European Super League. We got to talk about Champions League. We got to talk about the La Liga title race, which is certainly fascinating at this point. There are some glitches in the audio, so we do apologize for that, but we wanted to bring it to you because there's a great amount of information in this interview. So without further ado, the Ben Hayward interview. And joining us now on Low Limit Football, European football journalist Ben Hayward. Ben, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to have you back on. I want to open with your reaction to the Super League, and especially now where we're seeing Florentino Perez kind of go off, almost go rogue at this point, saying that these teams are bound by contract, you know, these 12 teams that signed the contract. There's been a lot made of Florentino Perez, and he's kind of come to the forefront as the leader of this European Super League movement, although many looked at Andrea Agnelli at Juventus as being the leader to begin with. But this has really moved into Florentino Perez's stronghold. And as the president of Real Madrid, he wields quite a bit of power, both in Europe as well as Spain. He's also talked about possibly suing UEFA and FIFA because of everything that's happened this week. So I'd like to get your reaction, especially being on the ground in Spain, what the perception is of Florentino Perez's comments over the past week, the whole Super League, and really what's gone on in the past week.
Yeah. Hi, Joe. Hi, Roberto. Great to be here again. And yeah, just a crazy week, hasn't it been, with the Super League stuff, which pretty much died within the space of a couple of days. But Florentino Perez, as you say, has come to the forefront as very much the ringleader here. And given a number of interviews, Florentino doesn't give many interviews, but, you know, with this Super League stuff, he's given a number of interviews. And I don't think that's really done anybody involved with the Super League any favors at all. He's not the best public speaker. And yeah, I think what's really become evident in his quotes, the fact that, you know, Real Madrid really needs this Super League to happen. And I think Barcelona as well, those two clubs in particular, just because of the financial situation, the big debts that they have. You know, Florentino mentioned that if the Super League doesn't happen, he said, we'll all be dead by 2024, meaning what? They won't be able to carry on running these top clubs. I think it really highlights the dire situation that they're in financially. He said there's going to be no Galactico signings this summer, and Real Madrid didn't make any big signings last summer. And yeah, I don't think it's done anybody any favors for him to be the main spokesperson here. But I think it does reveal much about how much Barcelona and Real Madrid really need this Super League to happen for an influx of cash, which at the moment they just don't have.
Well, Ben, I actually do want to go into that and just ask, what do you feel is next? I mean, do you feel that they will end up going with this, even with the amount of teams? You think that, Paris is just playing his bluff? I mean, what do you think would indeed happen after everything that just happened over the last week?
I think one of the really interesting things, Roberto, is the reaction of the fans that we've seen in England, very much against it. Fans from all of the clubs are involved. There have been really big protests. We've seen Manchester United fans, Arsenal fans, Chelsea fans. And Florentino Perez dismissed the protest by Chelsea fans as just being, about 40 supporters. And we saw the images. They were much more than that. And he also alluded to a kind of conspiracy theory, saying that, suggesting that some people have been paid I expect many developments to come, but given how fans have reacted, especially in England, I don't see how it can be attempted really anytime soon. Once again,
it's really a weird situation, and hopefully that some sort of solution comes into fruition within the next few weeks. I wanted to shift gears to the actual football that's going on onto the pitch, and that's talk about the Champions League semifinals. We have Real Madrid playing against Chelsea, the first leg at the Alfredo Di Stefano. Obviously, I think for Real Madrid, they need some financial backing and they need some sort of money. I mean, this is the competition to do it. So they have it against Chelsea, and, they're coming into a game where you would say they are slight favorites, but, looking at how Chelsea has been doing so far ever since Tuchel came in, it really has become a much closer tie, I would say, especially with Real Madrid coming with a lot of injuries. So how do you assess this tie before the first leg starts this week?
I think it's a difficult one to assess. What has amused me is looking at some of the stories coming out of the Madrid media since all this Super League stuff, and looking at the Champions League semi-finals. We've got Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City. They're backed by state-sponsored and oil-rich governments, and Chelsea with Abramovich, the Russian oligarch, and the Madrid media painting Real Madrid as if they're the paupers, the victims in all of this, and the plucky underdogs, when of course they've been paying some of the biggest transfer fees in history throughout the last kind of 20-30 years. So that's amusing. Obviously Real Madrid have still got an incredible squad. They do have injuries, as you mentioned, and Chelsea are much improved under Thomas Tuchel, especially defensively. So I think it's going to be a huge test. And Madrid are a difficult team to analyze, because they definitely earlier on this season they looked to be in big trouble. They scraped through their group, won first place. Yeah, you can't rule Madrid out. Obviously, struggling for goals recently in La Liga a little bit. Eden Hazard is back. He had a little cameo for them. So that's good news. And I would make them slight favourites, but massive test. And I think Chelsea, with Tuchel, have a great chance to get to the final.
And looking at the other semi-final that we have, and probably the more interesting one out of the two, it's PSG against Manchester City, the first leg obviously being played at the Parc des Princes. Obviously, two teams that have come with different ambitions. Obviously, PSG are going to look to avenge their Champions League loss from last year and win their maiden title, which is kind of the same situation that City are in, and this whole project that the owners are having of trying to be the best in Europe and the best in the world. Obviously, very good two sides that are in different situations in their league. City seems to be running away with it, whereas PSG are still in that race for Ligue 1. So I just wanted to ask how you feel about this tie-in. How close is this going to be on this week when it starts in Paris?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great tie, isn't it? We talked about Paris Saint-Germain against Bayern as a potential final. Obviously, it was last season's final. And when they met in the last round, many people thought, well, there's potentially two best teams in Europe. And obviously, many people were salivating at the possibility of a Man City-Bayern semi-final. But Paris Saint-Germain got through it. And yeah, I think City have perhaps the edge because of just how well they're playing under Guardiola. And it's the first time that, of course, they've got to this stage of the Champions League under Pep, which is a surprise, really, given, you know, how they've dominated in the Premier League. They've just had a little bit of bad luck here and there in the European games. And maybe Guardiola has tried to do different things and change things around a little bit too much. You know, we've talked about that a lot. I think City perhaps have the edge, but Paris Saint-Germain, with the individual quality, they've dropped 4 points now in their last three fixtures. I think, obviously, they're still in contention, but yeah, Atletico and Barcelona both depend on themselves. Barca had the momentum, didn't they, before the international break? They went 19 games unbeaten, you know, prior to the Clásico, and now, yeah, it's in their hands again. And Atletico, who dropped a lot of points, but now with back-to-back wins, it got a bit of confidence together again. You know, I really think it's likely to be between those two now. And I would maybe perhaps make Barcelona slight favourites, just because of the great form that they'd been on prior to the Clásico. They've got the momentum of the Copa win as well. But that game against Atletico at Camp Nou is going to be absolutely key. And for Atletico, if the two teams were to win all of their other games, for Atletico, a draw would be enough in that one. Whereas for Barcelona, they'd have to win it. And I think Simeone has never won at Camp Nou. So but Atletico did draw at Camp Nou to win the title back in 2013-14. So lots of interesting subplots here. I think Barcelona are slight favourites. Probably Atletico, second, Real Madrid, outsiders now a little bit, especially given how stretched they are with injuries and with the distraction of the Champions League as well. And we still have a Real Madrid Sevilla as well, so that's going to be interesting. And I think Sevilla have won 6 of their last 7, 3 wins on the trot away from home. So they're coming into some really impressive form at just the right time as well. It's just amazing to have a proper title race after, you know, some disappointing ones in the last few years.
Ben, I actually wanted to do a quick follow-up. Do you think that with Real Madrid kind of losing distance now in this La Liga race, that they'll focus purely on this Champions League and then obviously the two games against Chelsea? Or do you feel that with the side that they could still contend on both ends to get the title that they want, or titles?
I think they're going to focus on both. You know, I think they have to as much as they can. But of course, the Chelsea game, Ibn Zidane said, you know, it's the biggest game of our season. So, you know, obviously, depending very much on the result of that as well. You know, if they were to lose severely against Chelsea, then obviously the focus goes back to La Liga. But I think if you had to pick one, you're going into the semi-final, a priori, I think obviously that's now the focus is got to be the most important competition, and definitely the priority for Real Madrid. But they're going to keep fighting on both fronts, and yeah, they're still in it. You know, they're only 2 points behind Atletico. Obviously, they've played one more game, but yeah, they're ahead of tonight's game, of course. So they're not out of it, obviously, in La Liga as well. But I think if they had to pick one at the moment, it's probably the Champions League has got to be the focus, yeah.
So, Ben, before we let you go, I'd like to jump in and, ask you where folks can find your work, especially the clubhouse that you do with Cecilia Lagos is absolutely top rate, and I enjoy listening to it week in and week out. But where else can folks find your work?
Yeah, thanks very much, Joe. Yeah, we do the clubhouse on Mondays at 4 o'clock. Central European time, 3 o'clock UK. It's called the European Football Lounge, and we talk about all the main topics. We pick one main topic per week, and then chat about all the other stuff. Last week, of course, we did the Super League, and it was great to have you on. Apart from that, Twitter, my Twitter is BG Hayward, Instagram as well, and I also have a website now where I'm posting some of my own content, and that's bghayward.com. So, that's where you can find me. Thanks a lot.
Fantastic. Ben, thanks for joining us on the show. Always a pleasure to catch up with you, and look forward to having you back again soon.
Absolute pleasure, Joe, Roberto. Take care and speak to you both soon.
you know, Chelsea playing much, much better, especially defensively under Thomas Tuchel. They've really kind of bought into Tuchel and his ideas and what he's trying to do with this side. And they look better as a team than they did, you know, under Frank Lampard earlier in the season. Real Madrid clearly suffering through many, many injuries. I mean, at one point, their entire back line was out injured. And I think that has affected them ultimately in their La Liga title race, which we had talked about just a little while ago. This match, I mean, we know Real Madrid knows how to win this competition. That's fact. But in this case, I think I've got to give the edge to Chelsea in this one, just because of the way they're playing and the way Real Madrid has had to muddle through injuries here. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's a really tight matchup. And I think you could say that Chelsea have a slight edge just because of the injuries that Real Madrid have. But like you said, they have the experience having won this competition. So it's really the experience against the team that, okay, they have a manager that made the final last year, but, you know, there's only so much that Real Madrid can have with depth that you kind of have to factor Chelsea in. I think it's still a coin toss, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I think I agree. I think Chelsea are just slight favorites on this one.
Yeah. I do too, but again, definitely going to be a very close tie, I think. We'll have to see how that first leg pans out and if Chelsea can get that road goal that everyone covets in this type of competition. In the other side, we have PSG Man City. This could be a final, and we talked about that back when these two sides were decided to come into the semifinal. PSG obviously trying to get back to the competition final that they were at last year. Man City, this is the culmination of the project. This is the furthest they've ever been in this competition. And they want to get to that final. This is why they brought in Guardiola and why they spent all the money. And this is where they're at. But again, PSG under new management, of course, with Mauricio Pochettino, a manager that's familiar with Manchester City, of course, with his time at Tottenham Hotspur in the Premier League. This one shapes up to be a great one. And I think a healthy Neymar here is going to be a big deal. And how that back line of City deals with Kylian Mbappe and his speed and his skill is going to be something to watch out for. Also, if there was ever a midfield that could challenge Manchester City's midfield, I've got to think in this one it's going to be PSG's. And so I think we're going to see a great, great matchup there. We also have, you know, a guy like Keylor Navas, who is, you know, certainly accustomed to winning this competition himself at Real Madrid. So for me, boy, you know, it's tough to really pick one. I think this matchup is even closer to pick than the Chelsea-Real Madrid one, but I'm going to put it on PSG. I feel like PSG is just on a mission here. They've started to move back to the top of the Ligue 1 race. I think they're starting to get their hands around that title a little bit. And I think this is the main focus, to get back to this final and to win this final. And the way they can score goals is just they can get them from anywhere. So I think I'm going to back PSG on this one. But, man, this one's going to be close. It wouldn't shock me if we go into a second leg, extra time kind of situation in this one. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think this is as tight. I mean, they're both great ties. I think you would think that Real Madrid may be favorites against Chelsea based on team and experience. But this City-PSG game is just as insane. I think you have a team, like Bennett alluded to in our interview, you have a team that's playing a high line against a team that likes to play on the counter. And when you have those two players, like Neymar and Mbappe, on the counter, real quick, they can do damage. And they did that against Bayern, even though they weren't. Even against Bayern, they were effective and deadly with the opportunity that they had on the attack. So I'm also going to say PSG. I think this side is just a bit better than what City has, but man, this is going to be as great as hopefully better than the PSG Bayern match that we had in the two matches in the quarterfinals. So I'm excited for this one, but I think PSG have the edge to win.
And I also think, you know, just to further your point a little bit, I think for me, if I had to rate the defenses, Bayern Munich's defense for me is a much better and much more difficult side to break down than the City defense. I think there's better quality there. I think at goalkeeping, you know, maybe Neuer is a little better than Ederson, but I think that's almost a wash. So for me, the Bayern back line, I think, is a little tougher to break down. And PSG did it to the tune of 3-2 in Munich. So I really think that PSG kind of hold the slight upper hand, but man, this is going to be something that, you know, I think one thing that Bayern were missing was Robert Lewandowski in that second leg. I think that was a big deal. And that tie could have gone differently if Lewandowski was there. But this is certainly going to be one of the ones to watch out for sure. So let's table that discussion and let's get to our match of the week, my friend, because we've got quite a busy week coming up this week. Not quite as busy as last week. Last week was crazy. But we have, obviously, CONCACAF Champions League. We have Champions League. We have Copa Libertadores matches. And we have Europa League this week as well. So let's start out on Tuesday. Real Madrid-Chelsea, as we have mentioned before, 3 p.m. start. All times listed are Eastern. Then we go to the Copa Libertadores, Flamengo and Union La Calera at 6:15 p.m. We then go to CONCACAF Champions League at 8 p.m. with Atlanta, the Philadelphia Union at 8 p.m. And at 8:15, if you wanted to head back to South America, we've got Boca Juniors-Santos going to be a great one there at 8:15 p.m. On Wednesday, we have the PSG-Man City match at 3 p.m. Then we run back down to South America for River Plate Junior at 8 p.m. in the Libertadores. And we come back to the United States for Portland Club America, which should be a cracker, at 10:30 p.m. On Thursday, we go to Europa League. Man United Roma at 3 p.m. and Villarreal Arsenal at 3 p.m. as well. Then we go back down to the Libertadores with Racing playing Sporting Cristal at 6 p.m. On Saturday, we go to Italy, where Milan and Benevento will play at 2:45 p.m. And then on Sunday, Man United Liverpool, 11:30 a.m. in the EPL. Valencia Barcelona at 3 p.m. in La Liga. And we'll close out with a big one that could affect the title race and the Champions League spots in France. Monaco Lyon at 3 p.m. as well. Bundesliga this week is off as they are close. Bayern Munich had a chance to win the league this weekend, but certainly missed their shot. So they'll have to wait a couple more weeks to put their hands on that Bundesliga title. So, Mr. Rojas, I gave you the trivia question at the beginning of the show. I would like to give it to you again. As I mentioned earlier, 2 weeks ago, LAFC beat Austin FC 2-0 to start their fourth season with a win. Only one other team has started their first four seasons in existence with four wins in a row. Can you name the other team to complete that feat?
It's tough.
I'll let you take two shots at it, and then I'll give you the, so give me one.
All right. Can I ask a question then?
Sure. I'll give you a hint.
Is it a Eastern Conference team or a Western Conference team?
Western Conference.
Okay. Okay, I have two options.
Go for it.
I'm going to pick, I don't like this one, but I feel confident, the Portland Timbers?
That is incorrect. One more shot.
Okay. Oof. I feel like it's a trick question.
If I gave you one more hint, it would narrow it down to two sides. Would you like the second hint?
Oh, wait. Yeah, no. Hang on. I think I got it. That was one of these two teams. LA Galaxy.
No, not the LA Galaxy either. I would have given you the hint of it is a Northwestern club.
Okay.
So I'll give you one more shot. There's three.
Seattle Sounders?
No. Seattle Sounders? The other one.
Vancouver Whitecaps.
The Vancouver Whitecaps, 2011 to 2014, started their first four seasons in existence with four wins. I looked up the list quickly. I'm trying to remember now. I think it was Montreal. They'd beaten Toronto FC. They had beaten New York Red Bull to open a season. And then there was one other win that I cannot remember right now. Their first loss was in year five, and that was Toronto FC. Vancouver Whitecaps was the answer to that question, courtesy of Fox. And their broadcast of the LAFC Austin FC matchup. So without further ado, my friend, that's everything on the list. Let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
Here we go. So for episode 324 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Ben Hayward for joining us. Next week, we'll give you the breakdown of Libertadores. We will also give you Champions League and Europa League after the first legs, and we'll let you know how that La Liga race is going as well. So, for episode 324 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.